Get ready for all the craziness of small business. It's exactly that craziness that makes it exciting and totally unbelievable. Small Business Radio is now on the air with your host, Barry Moltz.
Well, thanks for joining this week's radio show. Remember, this is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, this is now, unbelievably, show number 507. This episode is provided by Nextiva, the answer to all your communication solutions in the cloud. It's also provided by Square Payroll, the easy way to pay your team. Go to www.square.com/go/SBR. It's also provided by LinkedIn, the place to advertise, to generate leads, and build relationships to your audience. For an exclusive free $100 credit, go to www.linkedin.com/SBR. Well, on today's show, we're going to talk about how you can attract the ideal customer by speaking their secret language. But first, can you really make money doing what you love? Carissa Reiniger is the founder and CEO of Silver Lining Limited. She's worked with major organizations such as Google, the White House, Hewlett-Packard, Intuit, Citi Cards, Staples, Citrix, and American Airlines to bring resources and support to small business. Carissa, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much, and congratulations on 507 episodes.
It's unbelievable. Started in my basement, and then who knows where you end up, right?
That's the story of being an entrepreneur.
It's great having now LinkedIn and Square as sponsors, and people always say to me, you know, Barry, how'd you get these great sponsors? How can I get them for my show? And I said, well, first you do the first 300 shows where there's no one listening.
Yeah.
They go, well, I want to jump to the other type of thing. Talk to us about doing something that you're passionate about, because I think that a lot of folks get conflicting advice. Some people say, well, you know, follow your passion. It's really important. And then other folks say it takes a lot more than passion to actually be successful in business. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Well, I think I would say I agree with both of those things. You know, my personal belief is that if you are living a life doing anything other than what you think your calling is, or what you think you're uniquely suited to do, or what you think you can have the most impact on the world with, you know, then you're probably not doing as much as you're meant to do. And I really believe that, you know, we live in a culture that has promoted this idea that if you just go raise millions and sell for billions and build an app and live your passion, you know, everything's going to work out.
And it's magic.
It's magic, exactly. You know, the truth is that, you know, it's really, really, really hard, and it requires an incredible amount of tenacity. And so whenever I talk to people about, you know, this version of what you, the combination of ingredients that you need for success, based on my own experience and watching all of our businesses, you know, struggle and grow and go through the ups and downs, is that I think it is an incredible combination of both passion and tenacity that's required. And if you're just a hard worker, but you don't care about, you know, what you're doing, I don't think that's going to be enough, right? You might as well just get a job and get a steady paycheck. And if you're all passion, but you don't have the tenacity to get through the ups and the downs and the rounds and, you know, all of the realities of being a business owner, that's not going to work either. And so, you know, when I see someone who's got this incredible combination of deep, real, genuine passion, and then the tenacity, it's not about hard work to me, it's about tenacity, the tenacity to go against the grain, to put up with the hard times, to get back up after they fail, because they inevitably will, you know, that is someone that I think will make it. And I really believe that is available for everyone, but not everyone is living in that reality.
So what are some of the early signs that you actually have that perfect combination of passion and tenacity?
No, that's a very interesting question. One of the most interesting things, I've been doing this for over 13 years, and we've worked with thousands of small businesses all around the world. And I'm at a point, not because I'm so smart, but just because I've been doing this for so long, that I'm pretty good at predicting if someone will succeed or not. There's three things that tell me, that give me the insight that I feel like I need. The first is the level of reality that I think someone is living in. You know, when you talk to someone about their dreams and their ambitions, when you listen, I listen for, you know, do they understand that they're going to have to sacrifice a lot? Do they understand that there's going to be moments where everyone thinks they're totally insane and they're going to go for it anyways? You know, are they living in the reality of what their ambition and their passion and their vision is required? is required for. So the first is, do they have reality? The second thing is every time a small business owner asks me for help, I say to them, there's this really great resource you should read, or this is a book that really helped me, or here's my email address. Send me an email and give me an overview of what you need, and I'll try my best to help you. And the number of people who don't actually follow through on that offer for help or on doing that thing that I recommend they do before they email me is incredibly high. So the second thing that I look at as an indicator of success is, does someone follow through? Does someone make a commitment and then actually deliver on it? Because that tells us a lot about their chance of success. And then the third thing that I'm always looking for that I think is a real true driver of success is just someone's ability to disregard outside opinion, to take on feedback graciously, but to stand firm in their opinions or their beliefs. Because the reality is that the road of a business owner is often lonely. Most people think you're crazy. You're going to get way more critics than fans and supporters. And so that inner strength to kind of be assured that even if everyone else doesn't agree with me, I'm still going to go because I think it's the right call and I'll take responsibility, whether I'm right or wrong, is a huge indicator of success. So those are the three things that I look for.
And Chris, I love this idea that a lot of folks don't follow up on doing what you suggest. I mean, I sell videos online and I'm amazed, and this statistic is going to blow you away. 90% of the people that buy the videos don't even open them up, even watch them
right?
one time.
Isn't
and they and they think that just by buying the video, they've
right.
solved their problem. But it takes hard work. It takes actually accomplishing something in order to get anything done.
Imagine that. Yeah. So a stat that I can offer that matches your stat. So our program, I realized really early on in my business that business owners don't really need more business growth programs. Really, we need behavior change programs, right? Just like if we want to lose weight, we sign up for Weight Watchers. If we want to change an addiction, we sign up for a 12-step program. If we want to get more fit, we start using Fitbit. There's science that essentially tells us what it takes, the type of structure and accountability and support that we need in order to change our behavior to get a different result. And when I look at the majority of small businesses that I interact with, and again, I interact with a lot of small businesses, what I see is that they're, perpetuating the same behavior day after day after day after day, and then thinking that magic will happen and they'll get a different result. So our program is really high on this kind of ongoing, sustained accountability. And a fascinating statistic, which goes back to what you just said, Barry, is that when we look at what our accountability team's workload is, right? And we do a lot of data analysis on it. Our accountability team is available 24/7 by text, email, chat, 1-800 number, you name it, we're available. And yet only 10% of the work that our accountability team does is driven by the small businesses asking for help. 90% of the work that they do is driven by our software creating tickets saying, wait, this customer needs this, this small business needs this, this small business needs this. And it's just another demonstration of, we sign up for these programs, we say we want help, but unless we're prepared to actually do the hard work on a day-to-day basis, we're not going to get the results. And so I've got the same stats on our side, and it blows my mind away, how many people don't take the day-to-day action to get the results that they say they want so badly.
And this is the responsibility you need to have as a small business. Chris, I want to shift gears a little bit because when I talked to you previously, you work on this thing called economic justice through small business. And I want to make sure that a lot of small business owners hear about what you're doing and get a chance to really get involved in what I think is a very important activity.
Yeah, thank you for asking about it. It's, when we had our 10-year anniversary, I started to think a lot about, what I wanted my contribution to be as a business owner. And one of the things that I saw in the world that really bothered me is that the storyline in business for so long, and, it's so pervasive, is that businesses, the job of business owners is to get rich. And then when we get rich enough, we start writing philanthropy checks. And then the nonprofits and the governments try to figure out how to make the world better. And that has never worked for me. I've never been aligned with that idea. And so I started to think a lot about what it means for business to play a really active role in economic justice. And one of the really fascinating statistics that we have based on the data that we collect is that, you know, so often we think that someone's circumstances have such a dramatic impact on their chance of success. But if we take out, you know, gender, age, race, location, economic status, and we just look at people's chance of success in our program, the factors that actually matter, that impact success, are discipline, focus, follow through, you know, showing up when they say they will, taking advantage of all the resources we offer. And when people do that, regardless of all of their, you know, demographic details, they succeed. And so what that told me is this old storyline that businesses make money and nonprofits and governments figure out the world, and this old storyline, right, that, you know, our trust fund and our university that we went to, you know, are the most important factors in our success. Those are not true. They're not right. And what I became really passionate about is figuring out how we get our program and just basic, you know, support into the hands of small business owners who do come from under-resourced communities, so that we can even the playing field. Because I have data that proves that if I can get the right structure and support into the hands of people, regardless of their circumstances, we can even out their chance to succeed. So for any small business owner who's listening, who maybe comes from an underserved community, we are about to announce that our program is going to become Pay What You Can. So regardless of your economic circumstances, you can sign up for our program and pay the amount that you can afford to pay based on your economic reality. And then the other side of that is that if you're a business owner listening that's achieved a level of success or was lucky enough to be born into a certain amount of privilege, we challenge you. We invite you, but I challenge you to sign up for our Silver Circle membership, which is also pay what you can, pay what you want. And 100% of the funds that you pay go into getting more small businesses onto our program. But more importantly, when you become a member of Silver Circle, we're going to do a lot of education, global connections, challenging you to think about how you use your privilege and your business as a tool for economic justice. And find creative business models and find different ways of doing how you do your work in a way that isn't CSR and isn't impact, but is true contribution to justice. And so it's something that I've become incredibly passionate about. It's what I spend a lot of my time and energy on. And I just think that if we can galvanize every single business owner in the world to start making tiny changes to create a more just world, business is by far the most powerful engine that could truly create a more just economy, you know, everywhere.
You know, Chris, you mentioned the word privilege, and I think a lot of us have to recognize that we come from privilege. I grew up in a middle-class Jewish white home. I had the ability to go to college. I had a lot of opportunities that no one ever has, and I think we've gone out, we've started small businesses, and I want to make a difference in the world, just like a lot of other small businesses want to make a difference in the world. I'm not going to do it by finding the cure for cancer, but this Silver Circle gives you an opportunity that you can make difference for other people that perhaps didn't start in the same place that you did.
Totally. And what I think is so interesting, you know, I always say that this conversation of privilege, people get really uncomfortable. And so it's been fascinating. You know, you've been so responsive to this, which I appreciate. But what we're trying to do makes a lot of business owners really uncomfortable, especially the privileged ones. And I just think that that's so fascinating. And what I've come to appreciate is that, you know, we all are dealt a certain deck, right? A certain hand of cards when we are born. And that has nothing to do with who we are. To your point, you know, I was born into a loving family in Canada, which is a great country, you know, where we could afford to send me to university. If I had lived in the U.S., we wouldn't have had enough money to send me to university. You know, I have had privilege. And I worked my butt off, right, to take that deck that I was given and to play my cards and to do everything I can to get the most out of what I was given. But I can't deny that I started further ahead than the significant majority of people in the world. And I was born in a, you know, lower middle class family. We were poor growing up. I didn't have everything. I'm a woman. I've had all the same Me Too complications that every other woman has had. But I still am privileged. There's no way that I can pretend that I'm not. And so I just think that for all of us to take a step back, live in a little bit of humility, and instead of feeling, you know, thinking that privilege is good or bad, just being grateful for whatever we have, and then figuring out how to use whatever we have, how big or how small it is, to make the world a little bit better. If all of us just did that, it doesn't have to be these big, crazy moves. If we each just made our own move, whatever it could be, we could make a massive difference in the world. And that's what I'm really, really passionate about. And that's where I do challenge anyone who's listening, you know, be grateful for your privilege and then figure out how to play that privilege, leverage it in every.
And I think that we lost Carissa. So, Carissa, thanks so much for being on the show. We're at the end of this segment anyways, but I did want to mention, if you want to take a look at your privilege, read a great book that's been out there for a long time. It's called There Are No Children Here by Alex Kotlovitz. It's about growing up in some of the public housing in Chicago. After you read that book, you will realize that there go I, but for the grace of God. Carissa, thanks so much for being on the show. Are you back with us?
I'm here. Thank you. Sorry about that.
So where can people get in touch with you? Got a few seconds left.
Yeah. The best thing to do is just go to our website, smallbizsilverlining.com, and there's tons of free resources. There's lots of information. There's a form. Literally fill it out. Tell us what your business realities are. We'll do what we can. If we can help you, great. If we can't, we'll connect you to someone that will. We want every business owner in the world to make money, do what they love, live their dreams, and we'll help you however we can. So smallbizsilverlining.com.
Carissa, thanks so much. This is AMA 20 WCPT in Chicago. Be right back. I know a lot of small business owners are confused about where to advertise online and how to actually get results. You gotta be diligent because you can lose a lot of money fast if you don't choose the right platform and the right audience. The question I always get is, should I advertise on a search engine like Google or a social media platform like LinkedIn, Facebook, or Twitter? For small business owners, LinkedIn is the place to drive brand awareness, generate leads, and build long-term, purposeful relationships that result in boosting their business. This is because effective search engine advertising should target audiences, not keywords. LinkedIn's network has more than 575 members, and their advertising gives you the ability to effectively target the right message to the right people while they're working. It has the marketing tools to help you target your customers with precision, down to their job title, company name, and industry. In fact, 4 out of 5 customers who are on LinkedIn are decision makers at their company, so you're building relationships with the people that really matter. This will result in higher quality leads and more website traffic. So to redeem a $100 free LinkedIn ad credit and launch your first campaign, please use this website for listeners of Small Business Radio Show. You got to go to linkedin.com/SBR. That's linkedin.com/SBR for your free $100 ad credit. Remember that terms and conditions apply. Let me know about your results.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva. Is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before with just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications.
Are you stuck? Is this the year you finally grow your business and make more money? During Barry's many years of running his own company, he had to deal with the challenges of a business that just wasn't going anywhere. It was a painful realization. His business had flatlined, and he had no idea how to breathe more life into it. It was especially difficult for Barry, since his customers were not getting the service he was so passionate about delivering. Second, he wasn't making any money. Finally, his business was sucking the life out of him. Do any of these sound familiar? Your sales won't budge in spite of your best efforts. You have few new leads for customers coming in, and existing customers are fading away. You're burned out and completely exhausted. It's no longer fun, and your family suffers as well. If you're one of the millions of small business owners facing these problems every year, Barry has the answer. Check out barrymoltz.com/unstuck to subscribe to his 6-part video series. That's barrymoltz, MOLTZ.com/unstuck.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Moltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, if you've had a small business for any length of time, you're probably wondering, how do you handle all the ups and downs, the positives and negative emotions that actually come with being a small business owner? Here to help is Joni Fetter. She's the president, facilitator, and leadership coach at Aileron. In her role as president, she oversees Aileron's strategic direction, culture, and operational activities. Joni, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Barry.
So the question I get so many times is, I didn't realize that this whole ride as a small business owner was going to be such a roller coaster. I'm not equipped for this. What advice do you have for people?
Yeah, I think we see it all the time in our course for presidents when we get started is we take a few minutes at the beginning to talk about those emotions and ask people, what emotions are they feeling? And it goes everywhere from pride to, you know, excitement. And then as we get into the conversation, somebody finally says stress, frustration,
right.
And then the floodgates just open up and people start sharing how many dynamics there are in the emotions that go. And I think what we find is first just becoming aware that there's a lot of emotion around owning a business. And starting just to start there, to become aware of those emotions and how they're probably playing out, because emotions drive action. So if you are proud of your business, you're probably going to go out and tell more people and get people to engage and stuff. So the emotions can drive the actions. So the first step is probably just getting aware that there's lots of emotions, and it's okay. It's normal and it's valid to have that.
And I love that you asked that as one of the first questions in your president's course over Aileron, because I think that people have a tendency to think they need to hide their emotions. And I believe what helps them being successful in business is to be the whole you. Just like in your personal life, there are emotions too, and that's okay.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's interesting because another reason we bring it up at the beginning is it's absolutely natural to your point to be, we can't check out and leave things at home. And I can't tell you, as my husband and I owned a couple businesses together, there'd be times, you know, he'd come home and ask me like, oh, did we put the kids' college money in their names, their names, you know, and you could feel
uh-oh,
the stress.
What happened today?
Exactly. So there is that stress, right? And you don't check out at 5 o'clock. As a business owner, you don't check out at 5 o'clock. So you need to be aware that this is a full-time, it's part of you. Owning a business is part of you, and having a life is part of you. So there's not that separation. The other reason we ask, which is always interesting, is because as people hear new ideas, so they're listening to your podcast and they hear a new idea, they're going to have an emotional reaction, and understanding that emotional reaction so that they can maybe stop to think about the thought behind it, so they could actually become more curious about it rather than shut down new ideas. So if somebody says something in the program, or you hear something or read something, a book, it's how do you maybe suspend judgment and be aware of the emotional reaction, why you're having that emotional reaction, like I've already tried that, or that would never work here, or that sounds like a bunch of, you know, BS or whatever it is. But it's being aware of that emotional triggers that happen as you hear new ideas, which actually can help you also run a better business.
And that's why I think it's so important for, if you run a business, to get together in some kind of group, right? Take a class, take a course, whatever it is, because you talk about that there are pains that get in the way of being a small business owner. Which pains do people most commonly encounter?
The fun format we've used is Strategizer's value proposition canvas. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it starts off with, what's the value you're bringing to your business? Or it asks basically, what's the job of this product? Your job of this podcast is to help spur thought and get people unstuck. So we ask people, what's your value as a business owner? What's your job that your business is hiring you to do? And they list off all sorts of things like to set direction, to grow and develop people, to manage customers, to structure the organization, to set the vision, to work on
family, shareholder relations, regulatory, and on and on and on. So there's so many jobs. And then we ask, what are the pains that get in the way of doing that job? And by far, the number one answer comes out is people. People, whether it be the dynamics in our workplace, in the culture, I'm not getting along with my brother, I've got people that don't listen to me, these millennials, I can't attract people, I can't find people, I can't hire people, I can't retain people. People don't do what I ask. I can't hold them accountable, and on and on and on. So there's a lot of pain around people in our organization that comes out, as well as many other things. But I've definitely noticed in the last 2 or 3 years, the answer has been a lot around, and I'm sure it's everywhere you're hearing it, is talent and the war on talent and getting people, keeping people. Culture is a big piece, which is people. But there's other pieces. Technology is moving so fast, you know, as far as growth causes lots of issues, you know, lots of information that they get overwhelmed, transition. So I could go on and on, but there's quite a few pains that get listed as we start to talk through that.
And Joni, this is really a double-edged sword, because if you don't have good people in your organization, there's no leverage. If it's just you, all you do is have a job. So you've got to figure out a way to leverage, find great people, build a team, have culture. And that becomes more difficult, obviously, when it's very low employment, historically low employment like we have now.
It absolutely does. And, you know, it's not even natural for us, Barry, I think, to know how to do this, because most of us got to where we were, or our first parts of our career and education were being individual performers. You know, we did well on tests, we did well in school, we did well in sports, we, you know, achieved and did so many things. So by the time you start to get here, now you're trying to do well through others, to work with others and through others. And that's not necessarily a natural behavior that you've learned over time. So that makes it difficult, but you're absolutely right. I mean, the world is requiring collaboration today, and it's actually a very joyful way to work, and it's so much more productive and effective. But you need to learn how to do that, how to collaborate with others, how to work with others, you know, give them enough autonomy and purpose in the work and have them share that responsibility. So it is quite tricky. But to your point, then you also have the economic conditions, which are great, but they do make it really tough, especially in certain types of fields as far as finding talent.
I think that, well, one of the words you said, I think that a lot of small business owners can connect with. And right now, a lot of them are saying, God, I feel a whole lot better. I thought it was natural. I thought I should know how to do that. And there really is nothing natural, really, about being a manager, a leader of the company. Joni, I was really fortunate that when I worked for IBM for the first 9 or 10 years of my career, when I became a manager, they sent me away for an entire month to their management school. And they actually called it charm school, right? And we went away for an entire month to learn how to be a manager and to get videotaped and to actually do all these mock things. A small business owner doesn't have that kind of luxury.
They absolutely don't. And you're building, you know, I don't know if you saw the recent commercial where they're building the car as it's driving on the highway. And that's what you're doing, is trying to learn how to be a leader and a manager at the same time you're selling and you're building a company and you're, you know, financing and paying bills and all that. So that's awesome you had the opportunity to do that, because there's a lot of great ways to become a better leader. And I think the interesting change too has been, for some reason, the word manager has become almost a negative word, in the fact that I don't want to micromanage, I don't want to control people, I don't want to dictate, I want to be collaborative. And I think it's the same way as people start to join in. They don't want over-involved managers. But there is pieces to it, to your point, that you need to learn how to, you want to learn how to do. And whether you call that leadership or manager, there's a lot to learn there that really can make the work so much more productive and actually grow and develop people to perform.
I love, Joni, you mentioned, and I'd never really thought about this, that you asked the question in your course, your president's course, says, what did your business hire you to do, right? And I think a lot of small business owners say, well, I started, they didn't hire me to do anything. But that's really what you have to think about, is what value do you bring to your business, and what gains can really occur if you can alleviate some of these things that are getting in your way?
Absolutely. And you know, it's interesting, because as business owners, we need it, it's a good thing to do, a good practice, to keep asking that to yourself and to your employees every year, because it changes. So what your business hired you to do when you were a startup was to go get customers, was to live on a shoestring, was to figure out what your competency was and where's our niche and what's really making and how to talk about our products. As I start to move into, 5 to 10 years in business, my business is actually hiring me to do something different. And how do I keep asking myself that question on an annual basis? Because I should be changing my value to the business almost every year.
So I want people to understand that it's okay to go out and ask for help. So I want you to talk a little about what you really do at Aileron, what the wonderful organization that Clay Mattil started, and how you really go out and help small businesses. And it's okay. In fact, I believe it's necessary to take time out from your business and go to these some kind of educational functions.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of entrepreneurs come with true grit, and that's that they'll muscle through anything. And so that becomes a very independent model. Like, I need to do it all on my own. And I love the phrase that says our brains are bad neighborhoods when we're there by ourselves.
And that is
that you get so stuck in your own thought process, or you get into a problem. And I just love the word you use, unstuck, all the time, because when people are stuck, a lot of times it's because they haven't reached out to get other perspective or processing out loud. Like, more than likely, they have an idea of the answer inside. But by using other people, whether it be a peer group or a friend or a mentor or a board of advisors or a trade association, oftentimes they'll get unstuck because they can process out loud and it starts to become clear what the answer is. Otherwise, everything's just swirling around in your head.
And you really, it's hard to do it by yourself. Talk about some specific offerings that are available from Aileron.
Absolutely. So we have a course for presidents where every month we have 20 to 25 business owners that come together, and they spend 2 days diving deep into a topics that are important to the business from a long-term sustainability perspective. So not many of us are in this game so that we can sell in a year, to jump out, to get out. It's to grow a really awesome business and then see what the exit plan could be. And so we need to work on sustainable practices, whether it be our business model and how we keep evolving that, whether it's about developing people for the future and what they can do next year, how they're going to perform better, about creating great cultures, about becoming a better leader and growing into that, about setting direction and strategy. So this 2-day program starts the conversation around those kind of topics about how you're working on that business for the long term. And it's just a wonderful experience from the standpoint of watching people who come in and think, I know people get nervous about coming because they're like, I'm not sure, everything's not great at my shop. And as soon as they start talking, about 20 minutes in, they're talking about all sorts of frustrations, realizing that regardless of the industry I'm in, I have a lot of the same issues as you do, and we're all struggling with this, and there's also some good ideas that come out of it. So that's our course for presidents. And once you leave the 2 days, it's really more about joining a community of people that are trying to do the same thing you are. And so we offer up business advisors that you can meet with on a regular basis to talk about your company specifics, or there's peer groups you can join in, or we have a annual summit where they all get together, and we have lots of different experiences, but you're really joining a community of people that have the same goal, and that is to grow a business in a really powerful way for the long term.
And I love the word you use here, Joni, which is community, because I think too often small business owners, it's lonely at the top and they do get isolated. And I believe your programs really do help that.
Absolutely. I think so, too. I mean, as a business owner myself, there were many days I literally paid $15 to go to a local, I don't know if you call it a Montessori or I don't know what it was. It was $15 to the Bergamo Center. And I got a small, tiny little room that had a desk in there. And I would sit there and just stew because I knew I needed to think better, but I didn't know where to go. And it felt very lonely and it felt very isolated. And then you start to get around the community of of other people, and they're trying to do the same thing. They're going through the same emotions, and you start to connect, and you can pick up the phone and call somebody and go, I'm trying to sell in this area, or I have an issue with whether I should hire this family member, or we're trying to understand whether we should give stock or not, or, this is getting in my way, or my culture isn't, I don't even enjoy working here anymore, all sorts of things. And people start to share, and it's just a very energizing way to continue to work without having to be alone. So no one's telling you what to do in your business, but you get all sorts of ideas and can feel much more connected to others who actually enjoy this game. They actually enjoy and are working really hard. So you're surrounded with people with a lot of the same values.
Joni, thanks so much for all the great work you do. You can go to www.aileron.org. I'm going to spell it for you, www.aileron.org. Joni, thanks so much for being on the show, and it's great to reconnect with you.
Thank you, Barry.
This is AMA 20 WCPT in Chicago. We'll be right back. Whenever I talk to a small business owner, I insist on one function they should always outsource, and that's payroll. You see, payroll is complicated, and both the employee and the government insist that you get it right. You see, when you do payroll, not only do you have to deduct money from the employee's paychecks to remit to the government, but as an employer, you need to add to it. Plus, you need to send this money to various government agencies on a regular basis, and if you don't do it, they will hold you personally liable for it. So this is one thing you gotta stop worrying about. That's why I recommend the new Square Payroll app. With this app, you can do everything from setting up an account to paying your team. It's fully integrated with Square payments and time cards for W-2 employees and contractors. Square takes care of your tax withholdings, payments, and filings at no extra cost. There is flexible and transparent pricing that scales with your business. So go ahead, search Square Payroll in the Apple iTunes or Google Play app stores to download this app, or visit www.square.com/go/SBR to learn more.
With Barry's 25 years in small business, he has finally discovered the magic formula to make more profit at any company. Business gurus make it seem so complicated, but it is really simple. The formula is P times P equals P, where people multiplied by process means more profit. Learn how you can take a quantum leap in just 180 days to grow the profit in your business. Contact Barry at Maltz.com.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Maltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business.
Stick around to get your small business unstuck. More of Small Business Radio with Barry Maltz, now on WCPT 820, Chicago's Progressive Talk.
Well, did you know that your customers actually have a secret language all their own? My next guest will teach us their lingo. Jeffrey Shaw was one of the most sought after portrait photographers in the U.S. for 3 decades, but now he's called the lingo guy. He's used his intuition to teach entrepreneurs how to attract their ideal customer by speaking their language. Jeffrey is the host of a popular business podcast called Creative Warriors, a nationally acclaimed keynote speaker, TEDx speaker, business coach for entrepreneurs, and author of the best-selling book, Lingo, Discover Your Ideal Customer's Secret Language and Make Your Business Irresistible. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Hey, Barry. Thank you for having me.
So now I know why I haven't been as successful I could be, because they've got their own secret language, just like my kids when they were little.
There you go. I mean, that's, I'd actually often preface the stage by when I'm doing a keynote to explain that lingo, if you think about it, lingo has been used throughout history to bind communities together, right? Cultures have a lingo. There's, industries have a lingo. Teenagers have a lingo, presumably, so we parents don't know what they're talking about or texting, right? So lingo as a concept has been used to bind communities together. So why, as small businesses, why wouldn't we want to understand the lingo of our ideal customers? Which does not mean that they may or may not be speaking, what you could say is our native language. But if you want to connect and embed yourself in the culture of the people that are your most profitable customers, the goal is to understand, speak their lingo, meaning you speak their almost unspoken language. That's why it's a secret language, because it touches them so deeply and with such care and empathy that it moves them in a way that it's almost that those things that we do that are those unspoken things that we can do for others that really truly move us.
And Jeffrey, this is a good thing because it binds a group together. Think about it. In my family, just as you were talking about that, we have our own lingo. We actually have a secret, I wouldn't say a handshake, but symbols that we make with our hands that are really that really are our own family hand signals. Or my wife and I, we have this code where we say, where do we keep our love? And the answer is an obvious answer, and that's kind of our special lingo. So this is a good thing, and if you can learn the lingo of your market, you can kind of be brought into the club, right?
Exactly, and that's, you know, and I do try to stress the point that as well as some businesses believe they understand their customers, what they might understand of their customers is, you know, the demographic, maybe they understand their lifestyle, maybe they understand their behavior. Right. And, you know, certainly with the use of tracking pixels and cookies and technology, we can know people's quote unquote behavior. But it's not enough. It's not enough moving forward, because ultimately, I think what people want to feel like is they feel the brands they choose to do business with, they want to feel like those brands really get them. And we get them at an emotional level that we are almost one step ahead. You know, to know your customers so well because you've studied them, you've understood the perspective in the world, you understand, you know, what emotionally triggers them. You can know them so well that they feel like they want to do business with you because you completely get them. And the advantage of that to a business is it increases customer loyalty, retention. It creates a community of raving fans. And and price becomes almost irrelevant because we care far less about prices of products and services that we choose when we feel like the depth of someone's understanding us is so great.
I love, this is my favorite part of the book you just mentioned. You said, lingo as a marketing strategy makes price and competition almost irrelevant, because a lot of small business owners think that in order to get the customer, they got to have a low price, but that is a race to the bottom. You've got to add something besides that. It's kind of like, did you ever watch the show Cheers, where part of their tagline was, you go a place where everyone knows your name. It's a place where you're comfortable.
Exactly. Great point. I love that comparison. And I love that you said it's a race to the bottom. And if I were to kind of pull back and look at the sole goal of my book, Lingo, is to encourage businesses to only work with their ideal customers, which I know goes against a lot of common grain. It goes against the Pareto principle, the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule states that 80% of your income comes from 20% of your customers. I'm not going to argue the mathematical accuracy of it, but I will dispute the concept of it, because it is a race to the bottom if businesses get caught up in a scarcity loop of believing that some money is better than no money. It's not. If there's ever a way for your business to have exponential growth, it is by working only with your ideal customers. So instead of, you know, the 80-20 rule actually states that 8 out of 10 customers are a waste of your time. Now, if 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10 of your customers are your ideal customers, you are, you know, you're obviously creating very happy customers who are more eager to help you, to encourage you, and tell other people about you. And here's what I think is the most important thing about working with your ideal customers and why it leads to exponential growth, is because working with people that already value what you do, your ideal customers, together you create better value. It brings out the best in you. And when you bring out the best work in yourself, you feel better about yourself, the culture of your company improves, and of course you've created raving fans. So I think as hard as it is for some businesses to say no, I think it is well worth the long-term investment to say no to non-ideal customers so that you can have a business where all your customers are ideal.
And that's the biggest trap you just mentioned, Jeffrey, that a lot of especially startup businesses get in, is they just want to do business with anybody because they want to be work. They want to need the revenue. And that really is bad. Last time I had Seth Godin on the show at show number 500, he said that 98% of the people in the United States don't know who Seth Godin is, but 2% do. And that's 6 million people. And that's enough for me.
There you go. I mean, as a photographer, I worked with the most affluent of the affluent in the United States. And statistically, I don't know if I could figure it out, because in the world, we hear a lot about the one percenters. Well, what qualifies someone as a one percenter is, you know, it's a lot of money. But if I actually look at the way my photography clients live, they were a small percentage of the 1%. right? So it is such a minor amount, and it totally teaches you the lesson that none of us are everybody. Even if you're in a high volume business, you're not for everybody. And the goal is to carve out the people whom you can create the maximum amount of value with, your ideal customers who already value what you do, they're aligned with your values, and you're speaking their lingo. When you align with those customers, your business. The crazy thing is, Barry, and every business knows this to some degree. Every business knows that often we jump through hoops, we waste time, we give extra time to the customers that are often the least profitable. And yet the customers that in the end are most profitable, we're shocked at how easy it was, how easy and pleasant they were to work with, and they're the most profitable. So we already know this reality. My point is then only have a business where you're working with our ideal customers. And the way to do that is to speak their specific lingo so that they feel like you built a business and are communicating directly to them.
So how do you do that? Where do you start, Jeffrey, to understand what their secret language is?
Yeah. So I actually, in the book, I tried laying it out very linearly because I kept telling my editor, we're writing a linear book for nonlinear thinkers, right? Because creatives, innovators, entrepreneurs by nature, we're torn in a lot of directions. So I wanted to make this really simple. So Barry, I worked it out to what I think are the five most powerful emotional triggers. The first of those emotional triggers is perspective. You cannot build a business and speak the lingo of your ideal customer until you have first understand how they view the world, what their perspective is. Real quickly in a snapshot, you know, my story is I grew up lower middle class and wound up photographing the wealthiest people in the country. And I did that at a pivotal moment in my career when I realized that I was a luxury product. I had to reach the affluent market. The problem was I didn't know their perspective in the world. So I went about studying their perspective, right? Which is a different thing than studying high-end brands. I wanted to understand the perspective of the customers that went to high-end brands and chose those companies. So perspective is number one. You have to walk in their shoes. Number two is familiarity. Familiarity is one of the strongest human emotions we know, right? We're drawn to comfort. We're drawn to what is familiar to us. We like repetition, comfort food. I challenge anyone to go to Europe and not see Starbucks or a McDonald's logo because it's familiar to you. It just explodes in front of you. So familiarity is a strong emotional trigger that we can create. Once we understand somebody's perspective, we can recreate what emotionally feels familiar to them. Number three is style. Style is how do you present yourself? Do you present yourself in a style that feels like it's speaking their lingo? You know, we go shopping, we pick something off a rack, and we're like, oh, wow, this is so me. Well, you want your business to be the business that somebody would uphold and say, this business is so me because it's speaking my style. It's speaking on my behalf. So that's style is the decision maker, right? That's an important component. The fourth is pricing alignment. So often entrepreneurs and businesses are afraid of pricing because they feel like pricing repels people. Whatever your price point is, it should be aligned with the psychology, the emotional trigger psychology of your ideal customers, and it will attract your ideal customers. And again, we all know this because every one of us at some point in our lives have chosen to not buy something because it's too cheap. And we assumed because it was cheap, it was poor quality because pricing creates perception.
Meet my wife.
I'm sorry?
Meet my wife.
Everybody.
If it's too cheap, it's not going to last a long time.
It's not going to last. It's a total perception. So, you know, again, you have a lot of power with the pricing alignment, but you want to align your high-end, low-end, and everything in between. You want to align it with what triggers your ideal customer, whether they're cost-conscious, value-conscious, or they're luxury buyers. And then the last of these five emotional triggers are actually the words you use. Are you speaking their lingo? If you're working in the high-end market, you don't want to talk about discount. You want to talk about upgrade, right? Or if you're talking in the low-end market, you want to have everything. You want to price your things like Walmart down to the 100th of a cent because that's speaking the lingo of cost-conscious people because it's down to 100th of a cent. You're not paying even more than a 100th of a cent. So it's not until the fifth and final stage can you actually apply the words that you do to speak the lingo of your ideal customer. And yet, Barry, you and I both know that businesses are inherently built backwards. When people go into business, the first thing they do is create a logo, a business card, and then launch a website and fill it up with words and wonder why they're not getting enough customers or their ideal customers. It's because they've filled up words without really understanding the prospective familiarity, style, and a pricing alignment of their ideal customers.
So how do you actually learn this? How do you immerse yourself to make sure that you can speak the lingo of your ideal customer?
You just said immerse. I love that word. I've not even used that word in describing it, but I think you nailed it on the head. Is immerse yourself in their world and don't deceive yourself by thinking that you already know them, right? A lot of businesses, I think, are deceived by, oh, I know my customers. I've been in business for 30 years. Well, I'll tell you what, Barry, their values have changed in the past 3 years. You may have known them for 20 years, but I mean, people's values change. Look at the value of time. Several years ago, we would justify high prices because we gave a lot of our time if it was a service business, or it took a long time to create that product, and that which meant it was worth a lot. Well, nowadays, it's the complete opposite. People will pay you more to save them time. So people's values change rapidly. You know, we used to think that the world changed fast and people changed slow. It's the other way around. People change fast, and the world of business is slow to keep up. So I don't care how well you think you do. You have to immerse yourself in their world. If you're in business today, one of our biggest markets coming up are the millennials. Immerse yourself in their world. Understand, why do they like Snapchat? Why is that even interesting to them? Why is the idea of things disappearing in 24 hours interesting? And how will that affect your business? I immersed myself in the world of the affluent people as much as I could when I was starting. And back in the day, I did it more brick and mortar, right? I went to high-end brands. Every dollar I made, I reinvested into a gourmet meal at a five-star restaurant so I could see and immerse myself in their world. But today, you can do that online. You can read what they read. You can read the blogs they read. You can go to the brick and mortar. You can understand the brands they're currently interacting with and why do they choose those brands.
I think that's a very important point, Jeffrey, because a lot of us folks have been in doing the same thing for a very long time, but we don't realize that things change.
Yeah, people's values. My business, I now live in Miami. My business was based for most of my career in New York City, Connecticut, you know, the tri-state area. I was living and working in New York City during the 9/11. Now, that was a world event that changed people's values overnight. I had built a business that was exclusive, that was brand name oriented, that was in my name. People, it meant something to people to have Jeffrey Shaw stamp on their portraits and greeting cards and the things that I produced for my clients. Well, practically overnight, people became very shy about labels, right? The word exclusive was now a very negative word, because we wanted to live in an inclusive world, right? It seems like today, right? I mean, think about the political and the cultural scene we have going on in the world today. You got to be careful. You don't want to be talking about being exclusive. You don't want to be talking about leaving out any group of people.
Well, that's for some of us.
Our business is built on that.
That's for some of us want to be inclusive.
Right.
Others, not so much. So, Jeffrey,
yeah.
I'm so sorry. We're out of time for this segment. If you want to get a copy of Jeffrey's new book, it's called Lingo, Discover Your Ideal Customer's Secret Language and Make Your Business Irresistible. Of course, you can go to Amazon or any other brick and mortar store. And you also go to www.jeffreyshaw.com. Jeffrey, thanks so much.
Barry, thank you so much for having me.
And thanks so much for joining this week's radio show. I want to thank our sponsors, Nextiva, the all-in-one communications platform, and Square Payroll, the easy way to pay your team. Go to www.square.com/go/SBR. I also want to thank LinkedIn, the place to advertise, to generate leads, and build relationships with your audience. You can go to www.linkedin.com/SBR for an exclusive $100 ad credit. I got to thank our staff, our booking producer, Sarah Schaffran, our in-studio producer, Lady B, our marketing manager, Courtney Gilchrist. If you're serious about being more successful this year, you got to give me a call, 773-837-8250, or email me at barry@moltz.com. And remember, love everyone, trust a few, and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry Moltz on the web at barrymoltz.com or more episodes of Small Business Radio at smallbizradioshow.com.